Casa de Representantes.
No regrets, because we believe we did the right thing and we worked very hard.
Pelosi, la primer mujer líder de la Casa de Representantes en la historia del país, señaló a la televisora ABC no arrepentirse de la campaña electoral demócrata.
The contribution is the legislation that we have passed. For all of America's
señaló Pelosi estar orgullosa de la legislación lograda por su partido en los últimos dos años de gobierno. La demócrata coincidió con el presidente Barack Obama que la derrota electoral no fue una condena a sus políticas, sino a que los cambios no se han producido suficientemente rápido. Los victoriosos líderes republicanos prometieron en conferencia de prensa el miércoles ser la voz del pueblo estadounidense.
The new majority here in Congress will be the voice of the American people, and I think we clearly.
Así lo aseguró John Boehner, posible líder de la Casa de Representantes.
We're determined to stop the agenda Americans have rejected.
Mitch McConnell, líder de la minoría en el Senado, dijo que los republicanos detendrán la agenda demócrata que consideran fue rechazada por el electorado el martes, como la ley de reforma a la salud. Por otra parte, la agencia de noticias Bloomberg reporta que la maquinaria montada por la Cámara de Comercio y los grupos de Karl Rove, el exasesor de George W. Bush, logró el triunfo de un número récord de candidatos republicanos en las elecciones del martes. Tan solo en los últimos dos meses, grupos afiliados a los republicanos gastaron 167 millones de dólares en sus candidatos conservadores, en comparación con 68 millones de dólares invertidos por los demócratas. De acuerdo a la organización Public Citizen, 58 de 74 republicanos ganadores se beneficiaron de fondos externos. El líder del Comité de Campaña Congresional Demócrata, Chris Van Hollen, declaró que la cantidad récord de contribuciones secretas gastadas en estas elecciones por grupos derechistas se convirtió en un huracán político de categoría 3 para los demócratas. El analista estadounidense James Petras consideró que el triunfo republicano este martes mostró la insatisfacción de la población.
Uno tiene que preguntar cómo un presidente elegido con un apoyo contundente puede perder. Y la razón es que privilegió Wall Street en la primera instancia, olvidó del problema de desocupación y más allá de eso no tenía ninguna política hacia las gran masas desocupadas que en la gran mayoría no votaron ayer. La abstención entre las clases populares es contundente. Como resultado, la derecha sube en el Congreso y casi ganó mayoría en el Senado. Y eso es una lección para todos. Un sistema electoral que siempre enfatiza los dos grandes partidos. Muy difícil para los pequeños partidos de izquierda tener acceso de los medios de comunicación. No tienen el mismo financiamiento que reciben los grandes partidos.
Petra señaló que en esta oportunidad las corporaciones apoyaron principalmente a los republicanos y al movimiento de extrema derecha Tea Party, contrario a lo que ocurrió en las elecciones presidenciales del 2008, cuando favorecieron al Partido Demócrata. Finalmente, las corporaciones solo defienden sus intereses, señaló.
Porque lo que los intereses, los gran capitales, es controlar el presupuesto nacional, canalizar los fondos hacia subvenciones por el gran capital, recortar los programas sociales, imponer una austeridad clasista. Eso es la verdadera agenda y todo lo demás es pura espuma.
James Petras dijo que el presidente Obama negociará ahora con los republicanos. El periodista David Brooks escribió en el diario La Jornada que, a pesar de las apariencias, el electorado estadounidense no dio una gira a la derecha en las elecciones intermedias, sino que expresó su repudio al manejo del país por la cúpula política y su desaprobación a demócratas y republicanos. Solo el 40% del electorado acudió a las urnas el martes. Los sectores de mayor edad y conservadores otorgaron un triunfo a los republicanos, mientras que las bases más jóvenes y de color, claves en los triunfos del presidente Obama y los demócratas, participaron en índices muy reducidos. Esto, señala Brooks, resultó en que los republicanos lograron cosechar un triunfo electoral con base en el desencanto generalizado entre los estadounidenses.
It's Good News Week.
El funcionario del gobierno venezolano, Arturo Cubillas, a quien la justicia española le sigue un caso por presuntamente pertenecer a la organización independentista vasca ETA, declaró el miércoles en la Fiscalía venezolana después de que él mismo solicitara ser investigado. Cubillas llegó a Venezuela a finales de los años 80 junto con un grupo de vascos deportados como parte de un convenio binacional entre España y el entonces gobierno de Caracas. En meses recientes, la prensa de derecha española lo acusa de haber participado en el entrenamiento de presuntos miembros de ETA en Venezuela en el año 2008. Madeleine García reporta.
Voces en apoyo a Arturo Cubillas. Aunque se sintió la ausencia del vasco venezolano frente a los medios de comunicación de quienes se cuidó para no declarar ni ser retratado, la presencia de Arturo Cubillas se sintió en las afueras del Ministerio Público venezolano. Movimientos sociales lo acompañaron mientras declaraba como testigo en la investigación que él mismo solicitó a la Fiscalía para aclarar la denuncia que cursa desde España sobre su supuesta vinculación con ETA y la FARC. Esto dijo a Telesur en una entrevista exclusiva antes de ser citado y donde fijó posición sobre este tema.
Entonces, si la idea de la Fiscalía era realmente, bueno, realmente investiguemos, pero investiguemos a fondo. O sea, realmente investigueme a mí, pero también yo quiero que se investigue por qué esta campaña, realmente de dónde viene esto, cuáles son los intereses. Yo creo que eso es lo que realmente hay que investigar, porque realmente es lo que va a permitir llegar al fondo de todo lo que está sucediendo.
Los compañeros de Cubillas coinciden que todo se trata de una campaña mediática.
¿Qué se trata de demostrar a nivel internacional? Que Venezuela es un país terrorista, que Venezuela es un país forajido y eso le acarraría sanciones.
Objeto de manipulaciones donde quieren vincularlo a él y a través de él a nuestro proceso revolucionario con supuesto entrenamiento, como lo dijo el juez Velasco.
Refugiados vascos en Venezuela deportados a finales de los 80 también se hicieron presentes en la manifestación de apoyo a Arturo Cubillas.
Este es el inicio de la investigación que aperturó Venezuela sobre el caso de Arturo Cubillas y su supuesta vinculación con ETA y con la FARC, además de presuntos entrenamientos en territorio venezolano. En cuanto a su extradición, el Ministerio Público ha confirmado que aún no ha llegado formalmente la solicitud desde España.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a la revista Contralínea y al diario La Jornada de México, a Telesur y a la Radio del Sur de Venezuela y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. A los radioyentes de las emisoras que no programan el Informativo Pacífica los viernes, queremos recordarles que la edición del viernes y de todos los días de la semana pueden escucharla en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Sometimes with speeches too, and also other things.
One, two, three, four.
Populism, yeah, yeah. Populism.
Democracy and let them eat.
And that's from Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, a musical with music and lyrics by Michael Friedman, written and directed by Alex Timbers. It's a public original cast recording, and we'll be hearing some more of it throughout this show. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio. That's also the website to go to if you want to become a member of Free Radio in order to, well, member isn't quite the word, if you want to be a broadcaster on Free Radio, if you want to learn more about Free Radio, if you want to check out our archives, if you want to listen to us on the net, that's where we are, freakradio.org. Luckily, we're also broadcasting. Some parts of this last year we haven't been broadcasting, so this is good news, and I'm glad it's happening. My name is Robert Norse. I'm going to be with you for the next 2 hours if you keep tuned. The name of this show is Bath Robespierre's Broadsides. A little bit of a tongue twister, Bath Robespierre's Broadsides. It's a show concerned with local politics, civil rights, particularly around homeless issues, and people who are poor and often powerless, or so it feels when the police arrive, or the merchant who wants you gone, that sort of thing. Do a lot of interviewing on this show that I haven't been playing. I'm doing the interviewing actually off the show. When I come back into the studio, I have all these tapes that somehow get bumped by live guests and elections that happen, and that happened. We just came from one, as I'm afraid everybody knows. And therefore, they back up. But I'm going to be playing some of the tapes now so that we can hear voices from people who don't get to talk and whose say-so, I think, is important. And also your say-so is important. So you can call in 831-427-3772. 427-3772 is the number. Talk about the stuff that, well, that you may be hearing, some stuff that maybe you think we should be hearing. And we'll all talk, 427-3772. Not sure if they're going to be guests tonight. A few people have said maybe, so we'll see if anybody shows up. But you can show up again. Just call in. If you're shy but you have stuff you do want to put out, if you have information you want to pass on or questions or comments, you can make them at the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's also my home phone, 423-HUFF, which is 4833, 423-4833. Feel free to call and leave a message there if you want, and we'll take it from there. Let's begin with some interviews, and who knows, we may get into the depressing election results, which I'm sure have been covered by other broadcasters on other stations at length. I was reading the Chronicle this morning and going through the debacle in San Francisco as well as here in Santa Cruz. We have a horrible city council, and one guy suggested to me it was probably the worst city council in history. Of course, I haven't been around for the entire 100-and-odd years or 120 years. I'm not sure how long Santa Cruz has been incorporated as a city, and they've had a city council. But this one promises to be no better. So maybe we might consider it the low point. Who knows? But, of course, city councils are what they do, and we'll see what they do and don't do. More important than the city council, of course, is what you do and don't do. And that's one of the reasons we're in the debacle we are now, is we've left things to the Obamatons and to the Santa Cruz neighbors and to the downtown neighbors and to the take-back Santa Cruzans instead of forming our own unified opposition of renters and disabled folks and homeless people and the different groups that don't really have meaningful representation, whose rights are being regularly discarded. And not sure what it would take to get that happening, but that's what interests me. Anyway, let's hear some interviews, and maybe we'll hear from you too. 427-3772.
So we're down here on the mall in front of the Borders bookshop. It's around 10 to 10. It's October 26, 2010, and we have a gathering of musicians, actually. Ricardo, Cal, Mark, Dave.
I told them they should get
and another guy who I know but can't identify.
Say that again, Dave. Little stumps for like the upside down flower pot looking shaped things for a couple of musicians to sit on instead of just a few benches. They thought it was a good idea. The hospitality guys.
Any hassles today with the hospitality people or tickets?
Came close. I've had them. They've just stayed. You know, they finally gave me the rules.
You're pulling out a piece of green paper. Why don't you show that to me?
Oh.
Let's take a look at these new rules. These are street performing in downtown Santa Cruz. There's a picture of the Scribner statue. Inside, welcome to downtown Santa Cruz. Be prepared to go to court. That doesn't say that, of course. But, that's the truth.
Go to court over
don't use a display device. Really? If you don't use, you can play, accept tips without placing a display device on the sidewalk. Perform anywhere on public sidewalks.
So I can imagine how long.
Let's get, say that again, Ricardo.
I did. We've got to go to court over that. I've played music right there for 9 years, and I'm from Berkeley. You know? So come on. I wonder how long the locals have played and the natives have played right there.
And at the corner, the borders meets the...
At
SoCal and Pacific.
Yes, see, because it's 10 feet from this darn change machine where musicians can be. But they're saying if we open our... And 50 feet... For spare changers, but they say if we open our case, we're spare changing. Why even put...
No, we're
busking.
Excuse me, you're not... The rules say you're not spare changing, so who told you that recently?
One of the pigs, and I hate to say it, it was the Anglo, the... yellow person. They're interpreting the law. These people act like they're the court or lawyers or judges, but they're interpreting the law, deciding if we open our case, then we're spare changing. I even had one of the pigs. But the pigs are out of control because nobody will get a lawyer on them. We need a lawyer like Berkeley has.
Well, you know, if people want to get together in the infamous Street Performers Guild, there's money for defending people. I guess... Wireless and Brent are going to court on a drumming deal next month.
What is this? This is good news.
Well, I don't know if it's good news considering the courts, but, you know, it is...
Fighting back against this Nazi establishment that just doesn't like music. They don't like rock and roll, or they're doing... You know, when did they start teaching aesthetics at the frickin' police academy?
Well, I think the question is whether...
don't like music either.
Mm. Plus, these guys are from freaking Ohio or someplace.
Carl, you have a thought?
Never mind.
You're responding to something else.
Ultimate power hates music. Ultimate.
Well, you know, the question is whether musicians want to, you know, gripe about it around the bench, as we're all doing, or whether we want to, you know, meet and get some unity on this, and I don't know
if they... I'm a Californian. I say we litigate. When in doubt, litigate. It's not called Sue Crazy California for nothing.
Here. Well, in order to litigate, you need to get people to get a consensus as to what they want to do, I guess. Now... we were holding meetings of the Street Performers Guild this summer, and it could happen.
We have to do
it. Could happen. It could happen again if people want to hold some meetings and come up with some answers and stuff. I mean, you might want to contact Tom Noddy, who's kind of a Street Performers Guild guy, or you might want to talk to Brent and say that you want to get together for a meeting, which we were holding at the Loud Nelson. So. Of course, you can also call Huff at 423-HUFF.
Huff
has a meeting tomorrow.
That's always a good... No, our friends at Huff are always a good place to turn to. They understand what we're going through, and they're right out here in the trenches just like us. Good old Huff.
Well, I would say you're more out in the trenches than I am and that most Huff members are, but I think that there is, for example, a Huff meeting tomorrow. If anybody wants free coffee, it's up at the Abbey Cafe.
Huff meeting, what time?
It's at 10:30 on every Wednesday.
In the a.m.?
In the a.m.
Okay, we'll see after Red Church tomorrow morning.
Well, that's good. If you show up, the church, the church I'm talking about is up at Mission, the Abbey Church. Abbey Cafe.
Abbey Cafe.
It's at the Vintage Faith Church, actually.
I'll be heading right up.
It's at Mission and High and Highland, where they all come together right on the corner where one turns down into Mission.
And that actually is held every Wednesday. We had a meeting yesterday of Huff. This conversation, of course, happened a week ago, but on the line with me I have none other than Big Drum Brent, the notorious drummer who is going to be drummed out of Santa Cruz once he goes into court with his drum. Or what's going to happen, Brent?
What is going to happen? I'm not quite sure. I have no idea what is happening. I mean, we saw this coming for a long time. We've been getting warnings for the last year, and we knew sometime, you know, sooner or later we were going to get a ticket, and it had happened when we really didn't want one. But I guess the last few cases, including yours, that have come through in the last few months have been
pretty bad. But let me ask, let's go back and just talk about what actually happened the day you got a ticket, and who, and where were you, what time of day was it, that sort of thing.
We got a ticket on a weekday. The prior Sunday, we were fed up. We've been playing in front of Borders, in front of New Leaf, actually. We've been playing for about 15 minutes, and the officer came up, and it was Officer Winston, and said we'd had a complaint. We were like, this is Sunday afternoon, actually late afternoon. How can we be bothering any businesses up above Borders? It's crazy. When can we play? We've been playing there for 8 years, and we were starting to get a little frustrated. So we said we'd take the ticket, and then we decided to not take the ticket. We walked down the road. What happens is that they get called by a citizen, we suppose, and we assume. And so he says, and he comes and warns us and says, look, we've had a complaint. You have to stop.
Now, let me ask you about this. Of course, the ticket that they're giving you is under the Unreasonably Disturbing Noise Ordinance 9.36.020, which doesn't require you to stop on the command of a complainant. It simply states that if you play unreasonably disturbingly loud for a sustained period of time and your activity is not necessary in connection with otherwise lawfully conducted activity, then you are guilty of an infraction. Did Officer Winston provide you with an opportunity to play more quietly but stay in the same place?
No, he didn't.
He in essence told you either stop or move on.
Yeah, he said stop, stop now, or you're going to get a ticket.
Stop, you're going to get a ticket. So he didn't even say move on, he just said stop.
Yeah. We've had a long history with him. We always, of course, this is not a Santa Cruz ordinance, right? This is a state ordinance, I think?
No, it's a municipal code.
There are the street performer ordinances that we adhere to, and we really try to not bother anyone. So we spend a lot of time trying to make sure that we're in one of two places that are the farthest away from residences.
Right. What are those two places?
In front of Borders or in front of O'Neill's.
Uh-huh.
In front of New Leaf, actually.
I mean, it's interesting. If you look at the city's code, which I just happen to have with me here, there are very specific restrictions on playing, let's say, after 10 o'clock at night. They don't actually, what it says is between 10 and 8 a.m., if you make an offensive noise within 100 feet of any building or place regularly used for sleeping purposes, or which would disturb or tend to disturb any person within a hearing distance of such noise, an offensive noise is defined for that purpose as loud, boisterous, irritating, penetrating, or unusual, unreasonably distracting, such as is likely to disturb people in the vicinity, included not limited to barking or howling dogs, by an individual alone, by a group of people engaged in any business, meeting, gathering, game, dance, or amusement, or by any appliance, contrivance, device, structure, construction, ride, machine, implement, or instrument. But this is after 10 o'clock at night,
right,
which is the offensive noise. The noise that you made, the music or the drumming that you were making, falls under a much broader statute that actually allows or requires a higher standard before it's violated, which says that it has to be unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or so harsh, prolonged, unnatural, or unusual in the use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort and not necessary in connection with an activity otherwise lawfully conducted. So the point I'm making is not only is the law clearly seems to me it's being misused by Officer Winston, although he would, of course, claim he's just acting on a citizen's behalf, of course. But, you know, he isn't even giving you the benefit of saying, okay, play more quietly, then you may be in violation of the law. You aren't even given that option, which I find shows me that what they're really giving is a complete heckler's veto to those people who don't like what you play for whatever reason.
Yeah. We get that our music is quite loud, and that's why. And we like
your music is drumming and what, washboard?
It's kitchen cooking pots with metal, special metal fitted hand gloves, mm-hmm. Which is not loud, but it is an odd meter and continuous. And then I play a plastic barrel with hammers.
Uh-huh.
And we're not going for the super loud attack noise. Mainly, it's just a bass boom. And we play in odd meters. And we get that if somebody's going to be conducting business in one of these offices, that the odd meters can be maddening. And we really would, you know, After I got the ticket, a few days later, I looked it up on Google, and I went to find the office.
You got a ticket, of course. You're not talking about the incident where you actually moved along because you didn't get a ticket there, but you got a ticket subsequently.
So check it out. We decided to go down the street and like, look, this is not worth it. Let's go down the street. My music partner hates the conflict. We're just out there to make art and music.
And there were complaints you think may have come from the Attic Law Office on the corner right above Borders.
Attic. What's the other name?
Penrose and
Penrose. Attic. Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Because so what happened was, so we go down the street, and then the following week, we're playing again, and we're a Peabody, Winston, and another officer stop us. One moment.
Hi, what's going on?
I can't talk to you. Yeah, somebody at the door. Hi. And instead of they talked to us for a while, and then Winston just supplies the ticket, and he says he went up and got the ticket, but our suspicion is he actually saved the signed ticket from the previous week.
Huh.
I guess it doesn't matter one way or another whether he did that. He didn't give us a warning. You know, the law doesn't, the ordinance doesn't have a warning in it. So.
No, it doesn't have a warning, but in theory, if part of the law states so prolonged, harsh, or unnatural, or unusual in its time, is it time, place, or manner, time, use, or manner, I know that when I and others were cited for singing downtown with homeless lyrics in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz in the middle of the day, because a guy who was trying to sleep or said he was trying to sleep above us, who hadn't warned us, then just suddenly announced that we'd been playing for very long and therefore he was going to get us cited.
Yeah.
It seems to me, you know, it's hard to say you can pose a defense on the basis, you can't do it on the exact specific basis that there's no warning provision in the ordinance, but
right.
It seems reasonable to say, given some of the requirements of the ordinance, it would seem a natural thing. I guess they consider that the officer's arrival is a warning, but this officer didn't say move on or quiet down.
No, right.
Not on the second occasion.
I'm really worried about the implications of this. Now, like I heard that you or some of the other people were charged with or convicted of conspiracy.
Well, we weren't convicted of conspiracy, but we were told that the reason we were convicted is because we were conspiring to disturb the business at the Bookshop Santa Cruz,
right. Yeah.
Which was completely false. We're in a sense, it's quite true. We're attempting to disturb them through giving out literature. We're attempting to disturb them through not the business, but the politicians who run the business. Ryan Coonerty, who will be mayor of Santa Cruz in about 2 weeks or the next few weeks anyway. But we weren't interested in making unreasonably disturbing noise to that effect.
Right.
And nobody in the business had complained.
Yeah.
So, you know, that wasn't it. But interestingly enough, on the first occasion, Winston at least told you a stop.
Yeah.
Did he tell you this on the second occasion, or did he just ticket you?
No. The other officers said, told us to stop, and we decided, we stopped.
Did you stop immediately, or did
you?
Yeah,
we stopped. We put our instruments down, and then we were just in. Then I just started talking to the crowd about the ordinance and what normally is happening to us. And it kind of made it a bully pulpit sort of situation. And then while I was doing that, the ticket was produced.
So in other words, it may have been a punishment for your speech in describing the abusive behavior of the officers and the individuals signing the ticket.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, you know, because hopefully you got some of the witnesses to give their names and phone numbers and contact points, because they can be, you know, counter witnesses to whether the noise was unreasonably disturbing. Not that Commissioner Baskett will give a shit, mind you. She's the commissioner who tried us, but who knows? I mean, it's I think it's good to do that. We've actually put together, Huff has put together a sheet, which we have given some performers. I think I've shown it to you, Brett.
Yeah, I have a copy.
Yeah, which you know can be used. You can pass along the crowd saying if you found this, you know, reasonably. Of reasonable volume, and it was not something you think should be criminal, then please sign up and give us, and we can, you know, your number and so forth, and we'll get you to testify. Were you able to do any of that?
No, not at that time. We did have somebody videotaping both occasions.
Oh, good.
And one of those is actually up on YouTube, and I'm kind of like boisterously arguing with Winston.
Boisterous argument is not, Commissioner Baskett, notwithstanding unreasonably disturbing noise.
No,
it's First Amendment protected activity.
Right.
You know.
But then we had Bob Noxious was videotaping our ticketing, and I've yet to find that. I'm going to look at. He told us he'd put it up on YouTube.
You know, I looked for it the other day because I interview Bob Noxious, and there is mostly him kind of talking about your situation, and there's no video I found of you arguing with the cops. So I'd like to see that because I believe that kind of discussion is important for the public to know and to understand that the police are not even enforcing a bad law. They are cooking up something that has nothing to do with the real law. We got a caller. You want to stay on the line? Maybe they got a question for you.
Sure.
Hang on. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Brent and Robert.
Hello, this is Al.
Say again?
Fresno. Al from Fresno.
Oh, you're calling from Fresno?
Yes.
Okay, well, Brent, let me wind this up with you. Have you been listening? Is this Al?
Yes, Al Williams.
Hey, Al, I know that you got some interesting stuff to talk with us, but we've been talking about the shutdown of street performers here in Santa Cruz. While I've got you on the line, we have Brent, who's going to court for playing his drum downtown in a musical group that's been playing for almost a decade on Pacific Avenue. Is that accurate, Brent?
Yeah, going on 8 years.
And what's the situation for street performers, Al, in Fresno? Do you have a crackdown on them? Are there street performers there? What's happening? You there, Al? Al?
Yes. Okay, I'm here.
Do you have street performers in Fresno?
Some, but not a lot.
Okay, and how are they treated by police?
Here is not so bad here. As far as the street performers are concerned.
So what kind of street performers have you got?
Mostly musicians playing music and stuff, and it's basically that's what it is here.
And are they, I mean, are they allowed to have their guitar case out to receive money and tips and so forth?
Yes.
And is there any law that you know of in Fresno that either restricts or prohibits them?
Not that I know of. I've seen them downtown close to the courthouse park, and they haven't been bothered there at all, as far as I can see.
Huh. And are there a lot of homeless musicians?
Yeah. Well, there's basically, yes. Especially in the Tower District.
Say that again?
Especially in the Tower District, there's quite a few homeless.
In the Tower District.
Yes.
Well, let me hang with me, Al. Brent, I'd like to hear more about this, but I want to catch Al here while he's on the phone long distance.
You got it. I'll call you on Sunday.
Yeah, call me up. And also, when is your court date coming up? Can you tell us so people who want to attend your trial can get into it?
It's I believe it's at 1 p.m. on the 9th, which is Tuesday.
Make sure it's at 1 and not 1:30, because these things are usually at 1:30. Whose court is it at?
Baskett.
In Commissioner Baskett's court in the basement of the county building, Department 10,
right.
I would think. Yeah, call back on Sunday, give us more details, or post something on indiebay.org.
I will, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you, Brent. Bye-bye. So, let's see here. What number did you call in on, Al?
Boy, let me check.
I don't want to hang up the wrong line here. So for anyone listening, this is Al, last name is Williams?
Right, Al Williams.
From Fresno, who is one of the successful folks in the lawsuit against some of the Fresno authorities for seizing homeless property. You know what line you're on, Al?
1 second here.
Was it 3119?
Sorry, your call cannot be completed as dialed.
I got to hang up one of these lines.
Please press the number and dial again.
You don't know. Okay, I'm going to hang this line up. If it's the wrong line,
It's 427-3772.
Oh, good. Okay, so we got the right. You got the right line. I mean, okay. I'm hanging up the right line. So Al, you're with an organization in Fresno that's what's the name of your group?
Free United Homeless Coalition.
Free United Homeless Coalition, or FUCK, if you will.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
The acronym. FUCH, but not FUCK. Apparently, people have been being a little more discussed. Not the Free United Homeless Coalition of Kleptomaniacs or anything like that. So the coalition is how many people are in this group?
Here in Fresno, there's probably about 20.
And I know
it's Fresno itself, but it's kind of spread out throughout the United States, also.
Really? So you're not your group per se, because I think it formed after that. But a couple years ago, the Fresno homeless people won a $2.3 million settlement from the city, and in fighting because their property had been seized improperly by authorities, and you got some kind of guarantee that your property, if it was taken incident to arrest, would be held and stored for 60 to 90 days, something like that?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, is that settlement happening, and are the police following the rules, or are they still seizing homeless property and destroying it or making it unavailable?
Well, we just got another settlement this year from the city doing the same thing.
Okay. And, what kind of a settlement was that?
It was from taking seizing homeless people's property.
Right, and how much did you all get?
They only reimbursed us for what they took.
Okay, and is this...
I don't want to, put everybody's numbers in.
Sure, no, that's fine. But has this discouraged the police from further seizures, or are they continuing on their merry way?
Well, here in Fresno, they're going to continue on their merry way. I guarantee that.
Has that happened since this latest settlement or not?
Yes, we're still getting reports there. People's property have been seized, although no settlements have occurred since then, since the last one this year.
Now, was it Local American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, helped you with that? Or?
Yes, we did again.
Unlike our Santa Cruz ACLU, which hasn't raised a finger on these issues in several years, if ever. So, you're... considering, I've been reading a lot of interaction you've been having, Al, with folks on the Fresno Homeless Alliance email discussion.
Right.
And, I mean, there's a lot of chatter about the homeless czar and lots of money not being spent and 10-year plans that don't go anywhere and things.
Yeah, I was on that task force that originated a 10-year plan, and out of 32 people the day that the Fresno City Hall and the Fresno County Board of Supervisors approved it, I told them at that time it wouldn't work. So you'll see a little abstract by my name.
Well, here in Santa Cruz, the 10-year plan is a 10-year stall to avoid, to make hay off of the issue without doing anything about it and, cover, it seems to me, anti-homeless laws in different cities. Although Fresno, as far as I know, it still doesn't have a sleeping ban. Is that correct?
Not really. Although the police do, make people move along. There's not really an ordinance, but the police still, perform as though there is one.
They tried to pass a camping ordinance, I know, and they stopped, right?
Right.
Why did they stop?
Probably for better wording of it. I'm sure they would, pursue it again.
Well, it was some time ago. I think it was a year or two ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, right.
So you guys have been, what if the police want you to move along, you just walk up with their, mace, tasers,
you have
and so forth.
Either move along or go to jail.
And what do they charge you with if they don't have a camping ordinance?
Vagrancy, loitering.
There's actually, because loitering and vagrancy laws were thrown out nationally in the 80s. Have they got some local ordinance they're using? Do you know what
it
is?
Well, they still use that. Another way, they can take you to jail for 1 to 3 days or whatever. Then when you go to court, it gets thrown out, but you still spend 3 days in jail.
So what's the typical thing that they'll send a homeless person to jail for if, let's say, she's sleeping on the street and they want her to move and she says, look, buddy, I got no place to go and I feel safest here, and they say, okay, you're going to jail. What do they usually take her to jail for?
Usually loitering, trespassing, loitering.
See, trespassing... Go ahead.
Yeah, they'll use the trespassing laws, though.
Yeah, loitering is one thing and trespassing is another. Loitering
right.
is something you do on public property. Trespassing
right.
generally is on private property, although
right.
there are some claims that trespassing is now going to be public property, and that's what's happening in Santa Cruz, which is ridiculous since, you know, this property is supposed to be open to the public, but not apparently according to the certain segments of the public that are considered undesirable.
Well, what they do here in Fresno, if you go on public property, then although you might have permission from the property owner, what they'll do is send code enforcement out. And code enforcement will threaten the property owner with fines if they don't make the person leave. And the fines are such huge numbers that they'd rather keep their money than let a homeless person stay there. That's the bottom line.
So they're threatening private people who want to let homeless people onto their property? Is that what they're doing?
Yes.
Is that my understanding? Now, what people have offered to let homeless people sleep on their property, let's say?
Well, there's numerous places. Like, for instance, they got about 6 acres on the alleys right off the freeway. And myself was asked to move during the time I was homeless from there. Because, the owner didn't mind, and the code enforcement approached him and gave him an ultimatum. Have us move or get fined.
Now, and where was this from again?
Where was what from?
Where, what area was this, a part of the city? What was it called?
Is Parkside area.
Parkside. Now, there are large encampments under the freeways in Fresno, right?
Yes.
And they have not been asked to move. Is that right?
Not since last January, I think.
And have they grown, or are they staying the same size, or are they shrinking?
They're getting bigger quickly.
And what do you keep in contact with folks in these encampments?
Oh, yes, I do.
And what are they called? What are the main encampments called?
Well, we got the Hill. Let me see. We got the Monterey encampment. There's the Hill. New Jack City, they closed it down. And there's about 3 major encampments there now.
So we're talking the Hill, Monterey, and what's the other one?
I'm not sure what they call it now. It used to be New Jack City, but they made a move, so then they changed the name.
Okay.
And, of course, they got the pedophile encampment that the city allows for them to stay there.
That's the pedophiles are in New Jack City.
That's for the pedophiles.
Okay. And are the pedophiles, and we're talking, this is, of course, because people with sexual offense records are not allowed in a lot of the city based upon severe state law, right?
But the city gave them their own little special area that they can stay there peacefully and everything.
Right,
but they got their ankle bracelets and all this on. And
but these aren't houses. These are what, kind of like tents or something?
Right. They are basically homeless pedophiles.
Say a concentration camp, in other words.
Right, right.
How nice. Now, are we talking about, do you know any of these folks?
Not really in that area. I go by there, I see them, but as far as personally knowing them, no.
I mean, I'm wondering, is this, in your opinion, are these people a danger to the community in terms of any personal experience you've had with them?
Not with me. I mean, they're, they're pedophiles. They like children and stuff. I'm not a child woman. But a lot of people don't want them in the neighborhood anyway.
Right, but there are a lot of people who didn't like Jews and homeless people in the neighborhood either. I'm just wondering.
Well, they don't like homeless people.
So you say these encampments have been growing.
Yeah.
What about services? And does the city provide any services, trash pickup, toilets, water?
The last dumpsters that were paid for and everything was by a marijuana vendor, medical marijuana vendor. And the city harassed him so much he finally had to pull out and everything. They closed him down and everything. The city refused. Matter of fact, I just sent an email to our homeless czar, Gregory Barfield, about 2 weeks ago requesting that they put some dumpsters out, at least put dumpsters for trash at the encampments. He said, no way. The city ain't going to do that. But they'll spend $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 doing a cleanup every other month or so. I mean, it's kind of stupid. But
well, you don't, homeless people aren't really human beings. They can be treated like large lumps of debris, and you need, you don't want to give them the illusion that they're human by giving them real trash pickups. Why not just bulldoze them away?
Well, that's what they want to do. But the federal judge stopped them from doing that. And so now they're trying to find another way to accomplish their mission, you know, with the same result as bulldozing, although not using that.
What kind of
resistance? I'm sure in their think tanks they're vigorously trying to come up with that solution to where they can continue to eliminate homeless people.
Now, what about the resistance to this? You've got much support from housed people and other groups?
Well, we got the Eco Village going, attempting to go. We got it started. We got we have a class at Fresno City College. We have one at Pacific College. And we have one at Fresno State. But the city still don't want to go along with the program.
And what program is that?
You know, to, like, we have so much abundance. We have land here in abundance that's sitting empty and everything. We asked them for, like, an acre or two to start a project, and they absolutely refused to. You know, we do everything else. We just need a place to do it on.
So you need
to have the technology. We have a well-known architect known all over the world who's designing these buildings. We have universities who are helping with the project. And we have homeless people who's working side by side with the college students. But the city refused to acknowledge this.
So when does the FUCH meet your organization? How frequently does it have regular meetings, have a website? Can people who are listening to this show contact it, contribute to it, get in touch, find out what it's doing?
Well, we don't have a website or anything yet. I mean, we're fairly new still. We basically meet anytime, you know, we need to, basically on a need-to basis, which is probably once, twice a month, sometimes more.
And I know that every time I read the Fresno Homeless Alliance, people engaging in these arcane debates about, why isn't the city acting more reasonably toward the homeless? You know, I get tired of that kind of shit because
more reasonably.
Yeah, in other words, they're not. I mean, it's not going to happen through this kind of chitter chatter, and they're not going to behave that way, generally, unless you have some power. And the way to get power, obviously, is to try to start exercising it through this combination of housed and homeless people working together and directing. I mean, we used to do it decades ago by, you know, sit-ins, sleep-ins.
Well, we're
going to
do that on Human Rights Day.
Well, yeah, actually, some of us in Santa Cruz are talking about doing the same thing because we have a similar situation. It exists throughout the country, of course, but in each locality, it's
worldwide, supposedly.
Right. The real question, though, is, you know, when people say, well, you know, this is a national problem, why don't you just relax or move to wait until, you know, the great, you know, great Obama or, you know, the great new mayor but gets together with the other mayors and they all make their decisions from their white hat, you know, their little white mansions, wherever they are, their fancy West Side apartments or houses. The answer is, of course, it can't wait. The weather is upon people that are cold and wet, and the police are coming down on folks, taking their property, taking their medication, taking their ID. This at least is what happens, as I understand it. It happens in Santa Cruz. It happens, I imagine, in Fresno. Right?
Yeah, and I just spoke with some people in Canada, and they got up to 300,000 homeless people there, and it gets much colder there, and they treat them the same way. You know, and, you know, when it gets in the 20s here at times, you know, mid-20s, that's pretty cold. I've been out there myself in the past, and it's not a pleasant...
So you're not homeless anymore. You're housed because of the settlement, the Kincaid settlement.
Yeah, but that money don't last forever.
Right.
You know, and that was like 2 years ago now, and you know, money comes and money goes.
What's the employment situation in Fresno?
About 16%
unemployed.
Right.
So, has that changed much in the last few years? What has it gone up? Has it gone down? As if I didn't know.
Well, it's gone up. A few years ago. When it was a big thing, it was like 10.5%. Now it's up to 16 and, you know, 15, 8, 16%, right in that area. And it's probably more if they actually counted everybody. You know, they're going by the people who filed for unemployment. That's how they base the numbers on. And there are so many people who don't have a regular job, you know, plus the people who are not documented.
Now, is there much connection between folks who are undocumented, and I'm thinking mostly, I imagine, of Spanish-speaking people,
right.
And Anglos or English-speaking folks of whatever nationality, I mean, do you guys get together? Do you, men and women, you know, are there any members, any Spanish-speaking members, for example, of FUCH, your organization?
Yeah. We have a wide variety of nationalities with us. You know, we gave up the race thing a long time ago and realized that it's economic world now instead of a racial world. You know, no matter what color you are, if you're a millionaire, you're accepted. You know, you can be a pygmy and you're accepted. You're a millionaire.
Well, there are those who say that the influx of immigrants depresses the wages, busts the unions. I think some of this is true. And therefore, you know, we want to start gunning them down on the borders or, you know, IDing everybody in town. It looks like they might be from out of the area or, you know, adopting the Arizona solution. Obviously, the way I'm describing it, don't favor that kind of approach. And I'm exaggerating it for dramatic impact. But what's the situation among people who are homeless? I've often found there's a lot of prejudice among homeless people against people of different colors, nationalities, sexual preferences. You know.
Well, that exists. It depends on where you come from and the city you come from and the area within the city that you come from. You know, that applies. You know, I know here in Fresno, the downtown area is a maze of hate. But people think the downtown area, because of the big encampments there, the three big encampments, that's where the majority of the homeless people reside in Fresno.
And by a maze of hate, you mean homeless people hating other homeless people or housed people?
Yes.
So in other words, homeless people hating each other.
Right.
Wow, so
and
tell me more about
that.
The city likes that. I mean, the British authorities used to have fun turning Muslims against Hindus and, different groups, in Africa, in Rwanda, doing the same thing with the Hutus and the Tutsis and all that, so.
Exactly.
I think that was actually the Belgians who did that, but.
But the city thrives on that because every time a statement is being made by homeless people, they bring the mainstream media out and show a picture downtown. You got the drug addicts, you got the drunks, you got every kind of person that on the planet living there in a group, and they don't get along. They fight. Whereas you go outside of that area, people live in unity and harmony.
And why do you say that? Why is that so?
Basically, because of the downtown area. Period. And social services there, like the Rescue Mission and Cabarello House. You know, they support that kind of activity. It makes some money.
What makes some money?
For people to be in that type of a situation, people to be depicted on the Pavarola House and Rescue Mission, it makes some money.
It makes some money, again, I'm sorry, to simply all be crammed together and...
Yeah. They get grant money and, you know, then people got $100,000 salaries or more.
Pavarola House is, of course, one of the poverty pimp establishments in Fresno, right?
Yeah. You know, the CEO's 100,000 plus a year, employees making big money, expenses of buying new Cadillacs every year, and this, you know, that's not helping people. That's, you know, making a living for yourself.
So you say this demonstration is coming up on the 10th of December, is that right? A human rights
day? Well, actually, we're going to start on the 9th because Thursday is open house day for City Hall. And if we do it on the 10th, there won't be no city council members there.
And
we're going to get there on the 9th and start there.
And what kind of a demonstration is this going to be? Talk a little bit about it.
Well, we got a list of demands, first of all. And we're going to stay there the whole night. We're going to invite the city council to spend the night with us and the mayor, which I'm sure they want, so we got puppets to take their place.
Who's going to take their place?
Puppets.
Are you going to have large, straw puppets or something?
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, you can set them on fire afterward, maybe.
That sounds like a good idea.
Burn an effigy. They used to do that to the British governors, effigies of the governor and so forth. So you're inviting them to spend the night. What else?
We're going to give out care packages like sleeping bags, backpacks, hygiene stuff to the homeless people. We need a big turnout of homeless people. Each person got 3 minutes they can speak if they fill out a card. So everybody that fills out a card gets a sleeping bag, a backpack, and whatever else.
That's at that city council meeting, you mean?
Yeah.
You got 3 minutes. We got 2 minutes. So, you know, you got a more minute than we do. One more minute. Not that it matters. They aren't listening anyway. But
well, we're not going to say much, except we want our human rights. Every person is going to say that. We got this. We still got a lot of planning to do. We got still a little over a month to go, and hopefully it'll be a big thing.
So what happens after the council meeting? Then you're going to spend the night outside, inside,
right,
on top of the building.
Right.
Which?
And we plan on sitting down the toilet, bathroom. There's no law against how long you can use the toilet, right?
Well, it depends. You know, now they may set up a new law. Here in Santa Cruz, we got an hour on the bench law. You're not allowed to be on a public bench for more than an hour in downtown Santa Cruz.
You mean you can't read a book on the bench?
You can, but not after 61 minutes. You better keep a watch with you at all times.
Well, until they pass the ordinance about how long you can use the restroom, we're going to put a homeless person in each stall and take shifts. Each person will stay there 1 hour at a time.
Sort
and be relieved
sort
by
of
another homeless person that has stayed in an hour.
Sort of a shit-in, eh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you. That's a good word.
Yes. A shit-in to demonstrate a shitty situation.
Exactly.
I don't know how it's going to fly with the upper middle class, but I think it makes me smile for sure. No question.
Well, we got to make a statement, and that makes a not only a statement, but kind of a stink, too, I guess. Huh?
So what are the specific demands you're making now?
Well, first of all, homelessness ain't going to end tomorrow, or next month, or this year. We want dumpsters. We want porta-potties. We want drinkable water, and we want the city to pay for it. You know, they get money, you know, there's no reason why they don't anyway.
Oh, they don't want you around. They don't want to encourage you. You may breed like flies if they did that. Next, you're going
to
be asking for prenatal care.
Then they have to come up
care.
With some solutions to take people off the street then.
Yeah.
You know, instead of trying to get rid of, instead of putting the energy and trying to make us disappear, they should put their energy into finding solutions to take people off the street.
Well, I understand.
That would be the humane thing to do.
Right. Well, remember, that kind of language to me is always kind of self-defeating. You know they're not interested. I mean, that's
concern.
I know
that. I know
so the
that.
Issue is not, say, you should do this. You know, the answer is, we're going to do this. Now, what do you think you're going to do?
Exactly.
We're not saying you should do this. We're saying you better damn well do this, or else we'll do this. I mean, simply as a matter of right and of necessity is, I suppose, one way to approach it. But, hey.
In other words, give them an ultimatum.
Go ahead.
We have a large hospital they closed down with like 550 rooms, I believe.
Uh-huh.
I think we should take that also.
Oh, is that... Now, how are the housed people who like to talk about this stuff on the Fresno Homeless Alliance chitter-chatter line but don't seem to want to do too much?
We have a problem about that in Fresno. If I can get all 20,000 homeless people to get up and stand up for their rights, well, we can kick some major butt here.
If you can kick 100 of them to stand up for their rights, you can kick some major butt. You know, I mean,
yeah,
you don't
we do
need
have
20,000.
You
know, if you get 20 persistent people who keep coming together, you can still kick some butt. In fact,
well, I was in a meeting yesterday, and we come to that conclusion that it's going to be a few of us that's going to make changes.
Yeah,
and that's where it's going to have to be, I guess.
That's where it can start.
And we also realize that if we can get Fresno to do what they're supposed to do, the rest of the state will follow in suit.
So how have the elections affected Fresno? Any sense of that? Did homeless people have anybody or anything to vote for?
The one hope lost, that was Cynthia Sterling, which was a...
Say that again?
The only hope, small percentage of a hope that we had was Cynthia Sterling, and she lost.
What percentage of the vote did she get? This was a city council, or...
Well, she's termed out on city council and was running for county supervisor.
I see. And she was previously on city council? Or?
Yes.
And
still
she
is.
And she still is.
January, she'd be out.
And she was a pro-homeless rights person?
Well, she was a great pretender anyway.
A great
pretender? She did what she had to do to keep a job. She did not do enough, in my opinion.
I see. But you still felt she was a hope, huh?
She was better than the rest.
Right. Well, we have a similar situation in Santa Cruz. Actually, there was only one council contender that I voted for. His name is Steve Plaich, and he occasionally comments on the show, actually comes into the studio. I was expecting him tonight, but he hasn't shown up. But, you know, he, of course, lost miserably, but not miserably. He lost valiantly, and he lost making a lot of important statements and, I think, raising a lot of interest. We've got a meal here that was canceled because the city is in collusion with the county in shutting down the Vets Hall, which is a place where we've had a traditional Thanksgiving meal for everybody and a Christmas meal. And the Vets Hall is also, of course, a place that homeless vets use to access services and so forth. And that was closed down essentially in a kind of a dirty deal. But there was some minor architectural problem that the vets found. Their own engineer said, it's okay, the building is generally sound. But the city and county have kept the building closed for the last 10 months, essentially denying vets a good place downtown to meet, to provide services and so forth. This also is a place where we had, where at least twice a year there was this big Christmas and Thanksgiving meals, which I generally don't think a lot of, because I think twice a year charity is not my idea of a good thing to shoot for. But it was a nice occasion when people could come and gather together, and that's going to happen this year in the Civic Auditorium, apparently, through the work of people like Steve Plaich, who kind of organized this. But we're talking with Al Williams, not about Santa Cruz, but about Fresno. And Al, anything else you want to say about Fresno before? Well, let me just say that there is a number you can call in listeners on, and you can talk to Al and ask him questions, ask me questions, make comments yourself, 469-3119, 469-3119. And if you're out of the area, 831-469-3119. So that's a number to call in case you want to talk to Al Williams of the Fresno Union of, what is it again?
Free United Homeless Coalition.
Free United Homeless Coalition, a brainchild of Jeremy Alderson of the homelessness, the annual homelessness marathon, which happens every year in February. I thought it was a little. He was kind of a sly approach, F-U-C-H, fuck, but don't say fuck at the same time. I think if you're going to say fuck. It seems to me, fuck this shit instead of saying fooch this shit, which is a little bit of French.
But it is an attention getter.
Does it really? Does it get attention?
It really. Every time I hand somebody a card, they say, "Does this say what I think it says?"
Well, that's
and
cool.
I get a moment to speak to people.
How many people have expressed surprise or interest in your t-shirts?
Just about everybody that sees it.
Wow, you got
it is an attention getter.
Well, good. You got an excitable population. I try to wear t-shirts that I think say stuff, and people just go to sleep. Ho hum. nothing happening over here. Well, I don't hear people calling in, so I think I'm going to roll on you pretty quick, Al. Let me give you the last word.
It was good to talk to you anyway.
Yeah, if you can, try to get one of those house people to set up a website for you so people out of the area can read what's going on and, have vicariously thrilled the homeless experience without actually, getting their hands dirty.
Right. I will do that.
And maybe even contribute something. Who knows?
All right.
Hey, Al, and I guess if you want to read more about this, you can go to www.indiebay.org/Central Valley, where Mike Rhodes writes occasionally on the subject and writes very well. I don't know, has he written anything recently? Or?
Well, we got the newspaper, so he's writing all the time.
Also the Community Alliance newspaper, right.
Right.
That's another thing to look at. Google for the Fresno Community Alliance newspaper.
Or, there you go.
Yeah, or just look for a Mike Rhodes, R-H-O-D-S, or maybe look for F-U-H-C, the organization. Thanks a lot, Al.
All right, thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. And that was Al Williams of Fresno, California, the F-U-C-H. And if you're interested, do check it out online. And you can also call in with comments and thoughts. Phone lines are open, both of them, 427-3772 and 469-3119. Let's hear a little more from the little-known and perhaps controversial Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
I wish that you were dead so that I could paint your face a different color. Who was it that ever said that my life really couldn't get any duller? My family's dead and I can't see a way to carry on. I'm not. And my life sucks in particular. Life sucks. And my life sucks in particular. When you have no one to show you what to do, Do you find your way when your country doesn't have a place for you? Do you have your say? Do you make him pay? Those wealthy New England Congress fucks would rather tax us and play polo all day than defend the frontier. No one's doing anything about it. Everyone around here's all pissed off, but no one's taking a stand. So I guess then that it's up to me. 1, 2, 3, 4! There's nothing left in this old town. Pick up your life and move it around. And what is it for me in Tennessee? Pick up your rifle and make a stand. You always said I should be like that guy. But guess what? I'm telling you. Fucking Jackson, and my life sucks in particular. Life sucks, and my life sucks in particular. The rain will rain down, the blood will bleed out, the sweat will sweat forth. How can I be that guy? How can I be that guy?
And that was number 2, the second selection, I'm Not That Guy. This is a kind of a favorable treatment of Andrew Jackson, the 7th or the 8th president of the U.S., 1820s, around the founding of the modern Democratic Party, redefining him as a rock and roll star focusing on populism, the Indian Removal Act, I'm reading now from Wikipedia, and his relationship with his wife, Rachel. And you can check more about this. I kind of like some of the music, and I think it expresses some of the spirit that I'd like to see people exhibiting with regard to oppression in Santa Cruz and elsewhere, and also in regards to the general malaise in the country, which put us in the fix we're in, not just with this election, but with the previous election, where we got a poser, a Democratic Party centralist, who's escalated the wars abroad and sold out the country to Wall Street, while passing a pathetic health care bill. And, well, you've heard my opinions on the Obamatons for a long time. But mainly I try to focus on what's happening locally. So let's go back to some of the local interviews and talk on the streets, as well as anything you want to say, 831-427-3772. There's the number to call.
Change your shift.
I think so. I think that's what it is. And there'll be free coffee, and we can all chat. Our friends, the police, of course.
See how they ran away when they saw Robert Norse was here? They said, oh, no, he'll know the truth, and we won't be able to bullshit him.
He is the greatest, I have to agree. But he isn't. I am not always going to be here. Instead, we have a madcap Mark, and, of course, ridiculous.
Señor Lopez.
Señor Lopez. And, of course, the other of the tres amigos.
Mr. Harris.
And Mr. Harris as well. So, tomorrow is the meeting. And, if you can't make it to the Huff meeting, you might want to start asking other performers in the street whether they want to get together for a meeting. And if you do, and you guys set a meeting, I'll come to it.
See, our problem is tomorrow is Red Church, and we get closed tomorrow, too.
What time?
10 o'clock they start letting us. But we'll get our stuff and have it delivered by back to our little place by perhaps 10:30, because we get there real, real early.
Well, we'll be up at the church until probably about 12, so you can show up.
We'll try and catch your meeting, and we'll bring this to Huff's attention, how we're being bullied and how we're having these yellow shirts and these police academy people interpreting the law, which is really, they shouldn't even try to interpret the law. They're not supposed to. They know they're not supposed to. They enforce the law. They don't interpret it.
Come on up. We'll talk about it. And if people can't make that meeting, still think about organizing another meeting at a time that's more convenient for everyone. Call me up and I'll come.
Yeah.
Say, Ricardo, you got a ticket yourself today for sitting where?
We're sitting over there by the sign. They said that we were 50 feet away. We weren't 50 feet away, but they didn't even measure it. They didn't measure it. They just assumed, they just decided we were 50 feet away. They said they were all 2-foot squares, but they didn't walk them. I don't think we were sitting with him. He didn't get one.
Now, when did this happen?
Oh, this afternoon.
And who was the deciding officer?
Oh, I don't remember right now, but I'll look at my ticket. But obviously, you know, if it had been tourists, they wouldn't have done anything. It was just me and Sherry sitting there, so they jumped out and they ran over.
It was a squad car?
Yeah, it was a fat one. It was that fat one who's, yeah, he's got a real fat head, too. You can't miss him. He's got a fat body, fat head. When you look at him, there's only one like that. Well, there's a couple, but this one's, you know, he looks...
What did he say when he gave you the ticket?
Oh, some kind of nonsense like, oh, well, people, not you maybe, but all these people will spare change, and then the poor people will get change, or something like that about poor people will all come here. And we're like, what's that got to do with us? But we have to get ticket. We have to enforce this. Enforce what? So, yeah, we're going to fight it. We were 50 feet away from the thing. We weren't spare changing. We were sitting talking to Dave.
Sitting within 50 feet of this change-making machine is illegal. Yeah. And 50 feet would be, I will mark it out. Well, here we are downtown. It's sunny.
And before we go on to that next interview, there's a distinction between a street performer with an open guitar case and a panhandler. Not that both aren't legitimate in their own way. I think they are, and they should. And they're a part of the scene. They're doing what they need to do or what they've chosen to do. And as far as I'm concerned, what they have a right to do. But the specific laws distinguish in Santa Cruz that if a person is engaging in busking, that term isn't used. But if they're performing, well, let's see. How is the phrase put it? Looking under the law, it is. A person is not soliciting when she or he passively displays a sign or places a collection container on the sidewalk pursuant to which she or he receives monetary offerings in appreciation for entertainment or a street performance he or she provides. So in other words, if you're engaging in a performance of any kind, music or otherwise, you're not panhandling. That distinction has been made in the Santa Cruz Code. And therefore, for example, while it's illegal to panhandle within 50 feet, and that's 25 of those long squares up and down Pacific Avenue in front of Borders, within 50 feet of a change-making machine, which have been somewhat strategically placed to move along groups of people that they don't want hanging out, it is legal to busk to... within 10 feet of a change machine, bench, street corner, building. And that doesn't leave a lot of room, but it leaves some room. However, it's illegal to sit down on the sidewalk. So if you want to do your own busking and be legal in that long 50-foot zone, forbidden zone, you have to bring your own chair. Maybe we should bring some sofas downtown. That's another idea, possibly. You're tuned to Free Radio, for those of you who just tuned in. It's a little bit after 7 o'clock. 101.1 FM is what you're listening to, Freak or Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of this show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Bathrobe Spear himself, although I do not have my bathrobe on. But, hey, one of these days I may put it on, maybe for Human Rights Day or before. Looking for volunteers, by the way, for folks who want to see just how serious the city is about actually implementing its new law, which is supposed to allow people who are sleeping outside and on a waiting list for shelter an opportunity to dismiss any tickets they get for sleeping, camping, or covering up with blankets under Municipal Code 6.36. That law was passed in September, went into effect about October 27th or so, and it's not clear what they're doing. As I heard from activist Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, that you are required to go in every week to renew your status on the waiting list, which can be a pain for some folks because you're not going to get to the top of the waiting list for months in some cases. So, but I'm curious to know what's going on. I think it's important. And there's going to be a get-together. It looks like a chow down and a demonstration at the county building at the courthouse on November 12th, the day after Veterans Day. That's going to be November 12th, right in front of the courthouse at the place where Peace Camp 2010 had its month-long safe zone, where it provided places for people to sleep that the city would not. And that's going to be at 9:30 in the morning, right before Linda LeMaster's court appearance there. She's a housed person who, in solidarity with homeless people, slept in her car and was given a ticket for which she faces up to 6 months in jail and or a $1,000 fine if convicted of 647E of the Penal Code, which prohibits lodging in any structure or place. And there are a couple other places it prohibits lodging. That's the... their nice way of saying, we can tell you what to do wherever you are, whenever you are, in terms of moving you along, regardless of how innocent or protected by the Constitution you would think your behavior is. Because we can just say you're lodging there. But it's particularly intended to harass homeless people, or rather used, at least, for that purpose. Anyway, back to street interviews. I think we're talking, well, let's see what date it was.
Kelly, on Pacific Avenue, it's about 1 o'clock, and it's Wednesday, October 27th, and I see a questionable individual approaching who refuses to be quoted on anything. So we're just going to let that guy walk by. Instead, we're talking with
Gregory Allen Stevenson.
And Gregory, you're a man who has many implements with him, sitting on a bench, hopefully for not more than an hour, because we know it's criminal in Santa Cruz to sit on a bench for more than an hour.
Well, I think it's really unfair if you sit on a bench for more than an hour, because simple fact is that's what benches was made for you to sit down.
Oh, what kind? Well, communist. You're a communist, right?
No, I am.
A terrorist, perhaps?
Nope.
You're Islamic, aren't you?
Nope. I'm a university person. It's independent and towards, you know, as they say, you know, way beyond the times.
And you're also a saxy man.
I am a saxophone player who plays sax and always love to play sax when it's time to play a beautiful sax.
And so you have your sax with you.
I have my sax with me.
And that's the case you're pointing to. And you have implements. Now, have you had any adventures on the saxophone on Pacific Avenue you care to pass on?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, people listen, and it's very great that people listen, because simple fact is that when people listen, you know, then they know the notes, then they know the melody, then they know how to write and arrange and compose.
Any hassles from the people in blue with the badges and guns?
Oh, no. No, I never had that, you know, approach towards me, and I probably will never will, because I don't go and blow my brains out towards, you know, so people can, hey, shut up, please.
You're a more mellow sax man.
Yes, I am.
Now, how long have you been saxing it up here?
I say about 59 years. You know.
How many years?
59, you know.
In Santa Cruz?
No, all over the world. Because, see, like I said, I am an independent time machine. Now,
how long have you been actually in Santa Cruz this time?
Oh, I say about almost a month.
You know. It's August?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, after my birthday. You know, I turned 61, so, you know, I figured in.
Congratulations. I was just saying congratulations to your mom who did all the work.
Yeah, Mrs. Julia Jones, she did do the work, you know, and everything. So, hey, it's very, you know.
Popped you out, raised you up?
Well, popped me out and raised me up to be a good Indian.
Well, I can't comment on that, but you would know better. You know yourself.
Yes, I do know me and myself.
Now, previously you were in Santa Cruz before?
Yes, I have. I was here in the 60s, you know. Hippy-dippy, you know, small-time, you know.
Taking LSD, I suppose.
LSD, oh.
It looks both ways before answering.
Did somebody say LSD? I think they did. Yeah. Oh, yes, I did.
Somebody did, eh?
Yes, I did. You know, I sure enough did. Yeah, I mean, it was basically, you know, LSD and mescaline.
Now, have things changed since then? And here you are on the streets in 2010, many moons later. Many moons later.
Yes, changes is always good for people because they always change. You know?
I don't know if it's always good, but it certainly seems to be a part of the picture. Now, do you think, what's your description about the kinds of changes you've seen in Santa Cruz?
Well, the kind of changes I've seen was more relaxing. And then at the same time, I see more nerve relaxing. What definitely I mean is definitely, you know, at nighttime, you know, people are, you know, party, hardy, darty, starty. And then in the daytime, you know, it's walk, talk, and that's it.
So, is there any way to put it in more bald terms as to what the differences are between, I don't know, 1966 and 2010?
Well, people are not, you know, right now,
huggy duggy, you know, I hug you, baby, you know, peace sign went out, you know. Although they had a peace sign up there on the hill, you know. I don't know, war going on. We've called Obama's war after we had Bush's war. Now we have Obama's war. And, of course, Santa Cruz, you're sitting next to a building which houses a lot of students here. We're here, you're on the bench across from Hoffman's restaurant near the Taqueria Vallarta. How are the students now compared with then, or do you have any sense of that?
Because, number one, back then, the students were like, you know, I guess the professors. And, you know, the people who ran, you know, somewhat of the United States of America, not all of them, you know, but some of them. But the question I would like to ask, why are you feeling that you need an Obama war?
Why do I need an Obama? I don't. I would like to see an end to Obama war, an end to the Bush war, an end to the Biden war, and frankly, an end to all these politicians who are pushing the war.
Well, I don't think, you know, in some retrospect that they are pushing it. I think the retrospect is that, you know, war comes to those who somewhat have hate in their heart. You know, so that's it.
I think they have love in their heart for the armaments industry. That's what I think they have. I think they have love in their heart for political power. I don't think they have hate in their hearts. I just think they are oblivious to the people they're bombing.
Well, bombing people, you know, is not what I can say the actual truth.
And it's there.
No.
This better be good.
The actual truth is that the political scene, you know, is always there for those who really need to call out and say, stop the bomb. That's why it's there.
So in other words, it's the critics who are to blame for the bombing.
The critics give, you know, the LSD trip to it.
Say that again?
The critics give the LSD trip to it.
They give the LSD
to, you know, the bombing and everything else.
I don't think Obama has been doing much LSD lately, although it seems that he certainly has been bombing a lot of people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Iraq, other places where innocent people are dying because this political administration has not stopped the war, as it promised to do in Iraq. Instead, we have 50,000 troops there that are running around killing and being killed, mostly killing.
Well, the war itself, you know, is basically winding down.
No, it isn't. Afghanistan has escalated since Obama got into power. He has sent more troops over there. I have to correct you.
If you look at, you know, how statistics are.
I'm looking at how statistics are. I think you're mistaken.
Statistics says, you know, are you being drafted or are you being...
I'm in my 60s. They aren't going to draft me, and they aren't going to draft you. Instead, they're murdering people abroad in your name with your money. And for you to deny that, I think, is unfortunate, if that's the case.
I don't even cross that line.
Why not? If you don't cross that line, they're going to cross it for you, and they'll do it in your name.
Because the saxophone talks, and that's how that goes.
And we have political opinions everywhere on the streets. We've been talking with
Gregory Allen Stevens.
And may your saxing continue. Sax on.
Yeah, sax on.
Thank you, man.
Peace on your soul.
And the same to you. But not if Obama has anything to do with it.
And the next interview should be coming up very shortly, but while we're waiting, let's have a brief musical break.
Oh, Andrew Jackson. Who?
I think you might be the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
My name is Rachel. A wise woman once wrote that illness is not metaphor. So why do I feel sick when I look at you?
There is this illness in me, and I need to get it out.
out. So when I bleed, it's not blood, it's a metaphor for love. These aren't veins, just the beating of my heart. This fever isn't real, it represents how I feel. My pain transformed into art. If you feel like you might throw up, well, that's a metaphor for how I feel when I dream of you bathed in your metaphorical blood.
And when the doctor says you're gonna make it, I tell him why I'm able to take it.
It's not blood, it's a metaphor for love. These aren't veins, just the beating of my heart. This fever isn't real, it represents how I feel. My pain transformed into art. My pain transformed into art. But Susan Sontag's dead, so I guess her cancer wasn't metaphorical after all. Sorry.
Metro Center with
Kathleen Hicks.
And Kathleen, you're here with some folks around the bike rack, which is right across from the Cruzio Internet store. It's around 20 to 2. And there's a problem here. What's going on?
The officers keep coming three times to get rid of the musicians, and I feel like it's wrong that we should be able to play music out here, and they just keep continue on harassing, and our money is paying for them to have their job, and they keep harassing us. You know, we're paying money to let them be here, the musicians, you know, and I had enough of their harassment, and I'm her witness that they're harassing her for no reason three times.
Okay. Well, should we ask anybody else what's going on? Let's see what's going on.
Yes. She's the witness, too.
So you've been observing some bad police behavior?
Yeah. Pardon me?
Anything problem with the musicians in terms of police hassling them?
Yeah, they've been harassing her all morning. They were kicking everybody for feathers in her hair. They're ridiculous. They gave me a camping ticket last night. And they just won't leave us alone.
Now we're talking with
Connie Brown.
And Connie, where did you get a camping ticket?
Down the alleyway.
And were you alone? Were you in company?
I was alone, but every time, during the daytime, I've been there for over a year. During the daytime, the kids go down there and drink Four Locos, vodka. There's vodka bottles and there were cans everywhere, garbage, Taco Bell garbage. I pick it up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then they're accusing me of making garbage.
Now, did they give you an option? Did they give you a legal place to go sleep?
Nope. No, they did not.
Did they warn you to leave?
Yep, I had to get up and move.
And
very clear and plain to say.
And how many times did you get? Have you been ticketed? Let's say this month.
Well, this is the first one this month. I got one last month. I was supposed to go to court for today, but.
Who was the officer who ticketed you?
Harms.
And what did Sergeant Harms say to you?
It was very rude. He just said, "Get up and leave. You know, I got complaints on you because you're garbage." And I'm trying to explain to him that it's not my garbage. During the day, I don't go down to my spot to chill the youngsters.
Now, what time of day or night did you get this ticket from Harms?
It was around 10 o'clock last night. I just laid my blankets out.
Do you have a copy of the ticket with you?
No, actually, I lost it, to be honest with you.
How's that? Well, let's see. We have another person here who's been getting some hassle. You've been hassled, too?
Yep. Countlessly. This is my first day back to town all summer.
Welcome back.
Yes. Oh, my God. Welcome back. For the two cops to come up to me and say, "Have you checked out your warrant yet?" They've obviously been checking up on my record, you know, and just been checking in on me, wondering when I'm going to come back into town and waiting to bother me the day that I step into town.
What kind of crimes have you been doing?
I've been playing guitar on the streets.
And are you singing. A bad player? Are you a
smoking pot?
Pot. Now, you also have feathers in your hair. This could be subversive, too.
Of which I'm a medical patient. And I'm advertising doing hair for people for Halloween and doing tarot cards and doing playing music and selling jewelry all over on the ad and selling crystals all this week until Halloween. Put it on your radio.
I will.
Advertise. Brianna, Sweet Pea, is down here to do beautiful hair wraps and beautiful henna tattoos for Halloween costumes with feathers and flowers and fall fruits in your hair for amazing prices. And I have a hotel room on Halloween that we're having a girls' party at the Sea and Sands Inn at the boardwalk, overlooking the boardwalk, with a fireplace and a big old tub, and tons of girls are already coming to do their hair and then go out in the evening.
Now, is this for girls only, or can other guys show up?
Only girls. The party starts at 3:33.
I'm going to get a sex change here.
Any woman who wants to come can come and get your hair done or just hang out. It is at the Sea and Sands next to the Dream Inn, overlooking the boardwalk. Call me at 805-704-7048. Thank you very much.
Now, Brianna, how are you doing with these other warrants? I mean, how many are outstanding for you?
Oh, I only have one from not appearing at a court date for these stupid citations that don't mean anything anyway.
What was the citation that you got before?
For being within 14 feet of a doorway playing my guitar.
Is this
for
Dale Williams Jewelry?
For being feet of a crosswalk playing my guitar. For smoking pot on the Ave. I have a medical license now.
Were these all separate citations or one citation?
Separate. Just harassments, constant harassments.
And this is all...
Picking me out, pointing me out.
Well, I know that we've talked before on tape, and you've discussed some of this, but you're back.
Yes, I am back.
And you're bad.
Oh, no, I'm not bad.
And you're good.
I'm very, very good.
You're very good, and you have a guitar. You're prepared to show us how good you are?
Yes.
We'll hear a little music from Brianna, the busker.
You know what I'm going to play is this Dead song, okay? That I sang the whole time I was in prison for the past 2 weeks, and my man fought to get us out of there. He paid his bail. He paid a lawyer. And spent $20,000 to get our time as short as possible. He took all of the charges, got me out of there, and is serving time for both of us.
What were you charged
and
with?
And now we have a little music in the sunshine.
Oh, in the sunshine, but it's about the rain.
That's all right. The rains are coming.
Such an amazing song. I was playing it the whole time. I was singing it the whole time I was in there. And couldn't remember all the lyrics and kept going around one verse and one chorus. Yeah. And it was driving me insane. Now I have the songbook sitting right here, and we will do the entire song.
Hit it.
And if the cops come by to harass us one more time because they told me to pack it up half an hour ago with no real reason as to why I needed to pack up except that I'm too close to that change machine.
You have your own chair, and you're not panhandling. You're legal at the moment as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
If you were on the sidewalk, you would be illegal.
Unnecessary.
If you were panhandling without playing music, you would be illegal, although that's ridiculous. But not according even to our crazy laws in Santa Cruz are you illegal at this moment as far as I can see. What do I know? I mean, the police always know best, don't they?
Okay, let's see if I can do it the whole way through without fucking up, because I'm looking at a music page. Here we go. Jerry, this is for you. I turn and walk away. Accept your offer, but I'd like to ask a break. I'm ready to give anything for everything I take.
So here we are in the middle of Godland, actually, Santa Cruz, in front of the New Leaf Market. And it's a very pleasant Monday evening, about 8:30 on November 1st. Boy, it's the 1st of November already, isn't it?
Wow. Here we are.
And you're giving out some food from the Red Church, Calvary Episcopal, which every Monday has a kind of a youth ministry feast, which Father Joel is struggling manfully to maintain in spite of the archaic ecclesiastical courts. They're trying to convict his ass and kick him out the door.
He is bucking the bureaucracy and faith and the power of God and the good hearts of him and his other associates are winning.
Now you're giving out watermelon. What else?
I'm just passing out the extra from the dinner this evening. I was sent as an emissary ambassador to the street in order just to help give somebody a bite if they're hungry.
Are people eating? I mean, I know there's a lot of excitement because of the Giants.
Giants, baby! 56 years! Woohoo!
I've been poo-pooing that and shouting, U.S. out of Afghanistan, send those Giants overseas.
Yes.
Maybe they'll do better than the troops.
We need to be out
Could
of
be.
Afghanistan. We can't be building pipelines for Dick Cheney and the neocons.
Or Obama and the neo-neocons.
Yeah. Well, the Giants have no big-time players. They did it together, just like the working class can. So we need to get the troops out of Afghanistan, and that's a perfect metaphor for what we need to do. We need to work together. All the fucking everybody needs to work together to get this done.
We send the Giants to tackle the Congress, and
we are the Giants.
Paid as much though as the Giants.
One thought: the Super Bowl, from what I can tell, is played with two teams.
Right.
Well, the U.S. government has two teams. We have neoliberals and we have neocons, neoconservatives. As I said, you need two teams to play in the Super Bowl. There you go.
It's
two
kind of
teams.
An entertainment.
Two
they're both pretending
teams.
To play each other. Ah, I love it!
Pretending to play each other in order to pretend there's a game, in order to be able to...
In order to amuse the masses while the
further perpetuate their agenda
on.
And their ultimate, you know, intentions.
Oh, by the way, what is your name, a Calvary Episcopal worker guy?
My name is Christopher James DeMarco.
And Christopher, how long have you been associated with this religious institution?
I've been a Christian since I was 9 years old, but I have had my struggles, my ups and my downs, and in my times of distorted thinking and addiction, I was given a very kind, loving hand from that church. So
how long ago was that?
That would be probably, I'm going to say, 2 years now from ago. But they were always there, and, you know, there's nothing better than something to eat when you're down and out and hungry. And it's as simple as that. Sustenance restores the spirit.
You're passing on the favor here.
I'm just basically giving back a little bit of effort towards something to me that is essential to the community, mm-hmm. And like I said, it's very small what I'm doing, and it's the least I can do.
Well, it's nice. Father Joel's situation is what? Is he about? How's he still hanging in there, eh?
Father Joel is a stoic, kind, loving man who has his eyes on the right prize, and that is to help his fellow man, help the children. Jesus said, help the children, and he is fulfilling his order.
Now, what about the fine and distinguished city mothers and fathers that are attempting to oust him from the church?
Well, unfortunately, their anger is driven by fear, and their fear is driven by just a total lack of understanding in regard to who he's helping. Unfortunately, you know, good people, too, don't understand what puts or how kids get in the situation they're in. But a man like him looks beyond that and basically gets to the basic issues, and that's sustenance.
Yeah.
If we can offer a little bit of consistency, a little bit of consistency, a little bit of structure, and a good meal, it's a step in the right direction to possibly changing that individual's perception of things.
Good luck with Cynthia Matthews. I like it.
Moving towards a better place.
He's the, of course, former city council member, actually currently on the council, soon to be former, who owns the historical house across the street. One of the people I understand who's involved in ousting good Father Joel.
Well, all we can do is pray for her and hope that she has a change of heart and she sees that the good work that he's doing is not perpetuating vagrancy. It's only addressing a problem that is not going anywhere. Let's be honest. If we look around the streets of any city, we're going to find a microcosm of individuals that's identical to this one in most cities in America. And we all can turn a blind eye, or we can extend a hand and show some love and just hope that possibly with that, maybe some changes will come in those souls.
Well, you have your approach, and I have mine.
And
love is all very well, but you know what they say, sometimes loving the Fuhrer isn't enough.
As far as I know, love is patient, love is kind, keeps no record of wrongs, it doesn't rejoice in evil. And
don't
most
tell it to the 6 million dead. I don't know what to say.
The 6 million dead are, you know, unfortunately...
Unfortunate, what can you
say? Can I do a heavy political rant? Because I can do it.
Go ahead.
You know, the neocons... what's their agenda?
But make it local, though. See, that's the
local
point.
Okay, local.
Or make it have it do with, because you see, I was making a satirical comment about how love is somehow going to conquer Cynthia Matthews in her attempt to oust Father
local.
Joel. I don't think love is going to do
shit. I think if Santa Cruz City Council got off that bench that they sit on in their little ivory tower,
right,
and they walked on downtown here, and they actually met some of these kids that are struggling, and basically got to know who they are, the dysfunction they come from, the, you know, maybe the bad hand they were dealt,
right,
they might find that compassion that I know everyone has in their heart, and ultimately their perspective may change. Until they get off their ass and down from their ivory tower, they'll never understand what the meek, what the poor, what the hurting go through. You know, it's easy for them to, you know, frown or judge, but ultimately, where's that going to get them?
And we've been talking with
Christopher James DeMarco.
Thank you, Christopher.
Fellow Santa Cruzian and
feeder of the poor.
No, just I'm a servant to the poor.
Well, that may be.
Anything I can do to help the charities, the faith-based charities that I feel are so effective in actually getting what the kids need, and that's just a good
gotcha.
Deal.
Thank you.
As simple as that.
When going to
singer, actually two singers, a plunker and a strummer in front of Logos Bookstore. I mean, Borders.
Make believe that Kennedy is still alive and we're shooting by the moon. Smiling Jackie driving by. They say, good try. Tomorrow when he's going to die.
And it's Monday. Actually, Tuesday, Election Day, November 2nd, 2010. I'm in front of the Gap, and we're listening to some instrumentalists here plunking and stroking and strumping and barefoot. Actually, we've got one woman with looks like a bass viol, and a crowd of at least four people watching. A display device, one, two, three, actually legally placed on the sidewalk. And there's a discussion as to who's going to do what next. Very good. People are passing on change to the folks. And one woman is putting down her bag so she can have a listen. She's smiling, doing a little foot tapping as she hears the music. A guy in his car is parked behind him. And it's warm, balmy weather here on a... about 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. As you can hear, the blinking is continuing. Can't hear much of it, of course, but you get the idea. People are smiling. And here's a man with a feather or two for sale, standing on his bike. I see you're displaying your artwork. They don't have any prices attached. Why is that, Dreamcatcher?
Because you'll give me the fairest price of anybody if you want to buy them.
But I'm not the man who's necessarily going to buy anything. What about your average customer?
I said if. It's 20, 10, 5, and 2.
20, 10, 5, and 2. What does that mean?
That means $20 if you want to give me what they're worth, $10 if you want to give me half of what they're worth, $5 if you want to give me just enough to do anything with, and $2 is a sacrifice.
There you have it. The dream catcher catching, well, dispersing his dreams as he goes.
Report
cops from the street, Dreamcatcher?
Yeah, we got a guy that just came off parole that's, like, street sweeping.
Really? Well, that's good.
Take his interview. His name is Rob. He's a big guy. He's sitting up there. He's a big guy. He's sitting up there next to my backpack.
Oh,
yeah, go get an interview. Go get an interview from him because he just got up parole and he gave me a big kiss on the lips.
Now, were you out on Halloween wandering about?
No, I was trying to, but I came down with a toothache.
Oh, how are your teeth doing?
Terrible.
Still aching?
Not today at the moment, no.
Well, people are...
Cookie. Cookie?
Yeah.
Cookies, I see.
Yeah.
Poor cookie.
The coffee roasting companies in the annex where smokers smoke and previously
tokers
toke. And tokers toke, and it's also kind of between here and the
people,
massive
people
parking garage.
Make love back here.
And it's a fucking good place, is what you're saying, eh, Chris?
It is. It's a good place to hang out.
With me, of course, is the inimitable curb hugger Christopher Doyen, who's apparently
just got back from voting. Voting, I voted.
He voted. He has a little butt sticker on his shirt saying,
voting stickers.
He's saying, I voted.
Didn't vote twice, no.
Well, that's good. I mean, not that you had anybody to vote for, mind you, but nonetheless.
I voted for you. I wrote you in.
Actually, you didn't write me in. Because I'm not a legitimate write-in candidate. I'm more of an illegitimate write-in candidate.
I wrote your name in anyway.
You're such a silly boy.
I put Emperor next to it because I figured that was the title.
Emperor North, see. Well, that's how some regard me. Ah, royalty, it's such a burden. But in any case, you've been sleeping on the levee again, and finally, with a tent up, no less.
Actually, let's be clear, I don't sleep on the levee at all. I couldn't stand the levee. It's crowded with a lot of tweakers and meth users and shit like that. I sleep in the river bottom, like right on the sandbars in the very, very middle of the center of the San Lorenzo River, right near the county courthouse and the Ocean Street Bridge.
Okay, and you've been doing this for the last four nights?
I've been sleeping in that spot for almost 2 years now. Coming up on 2 years I've been in that spot.
But you were approached by an officer of the law of the female variety.
I did. I didn't catch her name, but she's pretty well known. She works the downtown area here, a little lady. And it's the first time ever since I've been staying here, I made an attempt to stay dry during one of the rainstorms and popped up a brand new Eureka Dome tent that the kind lady, local lady, had donated to me. Very, very nice tent anyway, and I put it up, and for 2 days I stayed dry as a bone. I left it right there. I left all my stuff in it. I came and went. I came up here. It was actually quite interesting. It's very comfortable. It's very cool. Something that I wish was legal all the time because it really made my life a lot easier, actually, for 2 days while it was raining.
But then on the third or fourth day?
They seem to have ignored it, as they tend to do a lot. They ignored it during the actual rain days, the 2 days when it rained. But then when it was obviously going to clear up and the sun was going to come back out, they were there bright and early. I had intended to try to get up earlier than them because I knew they probably would be coming. But the police, Santa Cruz Police Department, and that's exactly what I got. It was a good morning. This is your wake-up call, Santa Cruz Police Department, that's what they said.
How many police officers were there?
Just the one lady there. Yeah.
And she then attempted to advise you about identification?
Yeah, she advised me that I should probably get some ID, and I explained to her that I had appeared in the Santa Cruz Sentinel 14 times this year, and I didn't feel like that.
Name dropper?
I didn't need to prove my identification, but if she had a problem with it, she could always call the mayor. I had a cell phone number, and I'm sure he would be more than happy to verify my ID. Well, and then she tried to say, well, I could be stealing that identity, and I laughed. I literally fell over backwards laughing, going, lady, nobody would steal this identity. You couldn't give this thing away, okay? So I was like, and...
Were you showing her a ticket or a piece of paper or something?
I didn't show her shit. I did what the Supreme Court requires everybody in the land to do, and that is to give your name and address to an officer. That is required by anybody, and that was the Supreme Court ruling very, very recently within the last few years. I'm not required to prove that information is true because that information...
I'm not sure you're going to require to do that. You can give your thumbprint as well. You can.
That was argued, although the fellow in the particular case where it was argued, he had been pulled over in rural Georgia. And he attempted that, and that didn't fly. That didn't pass muster.
Well, police departments that don't pay much attention to the Constitution, as you may have noticed in Santa Cruz.
But he's the one who brought that case forward and made it so that now you got to give them your name and your address, but you don't have to provide any form of proof whatsoever. That's up to them. And
you know, common citizens are considered.
So now you have a 6.36010 A, B, or C ticket.
I don't know.
He's digging into his pocket. Or that's a nice pair of clean camouflage pants you have there.
Very dirty, actually. Very.
You have a clean look to them. Let's put it that way. And you're again trying to find the offending citation. You're also, are you not? You're going to court for other citations, or have they been
apparently
dropped?
Not. Apparently, they've disappeared off the. I don't know if "dropped" is the right word. Mysteriously disappearing and reappearing charges because they seem to flit in and out of existence based on
647E illegal lodging from the Peace Camp 2010 protest.
2010, yeah, and so I'm not really sure what's up with that. Code section 13.04.010MC.
Probably that's B.
Area closed. I was in a closed area. Of course, there was no sign in that particular area that I was in indicating that it was closed.
Were you asked to leave?
And I actually think she's incorrect, and I may actually beat this ticket because I believe I was on county property, not city property anyway. I was on that second half of the park. You know how the park is divided into like two-thirds of it is the city and then that last one-third. Remember how they made the exemption for the smoking tent last year?
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a jurisdiction, a demarcation, and I'm almost certain I'm not in the closed area. So I probably will actually fight this ticket because I don't believe I was actually. She should have probably got me for camping. She said she was doing me a favor by doing this.
No, she's not. That's a higher fine.
It may be a higher fine, but I really think it's bogus. I don't think she. No. I think she got her facts wrong. So.
Well, she wasn't doing you a favor if she got her facts wrong. She just made a mistake.
Yeah. I think I'll go ahead and fight.
She was trying to do the opposite. She had a choice between a camping ticket and a closed area ticket.
Well,
camping tickets are
the
cheaper.
The whole confrontation was rather robust because there was the whole ID thing where I just kind of laughed in her face. And of course, it dawned on her within 30 seconds exactly who I was. It took her a minute to realize it. She's like, well, have you ever been arrested in Santa Cruz County? And I started laughing again. And she's like, why are you laughing? And I was like, lady, I was arrested on television. how much more public do you want to get? And then it dawned on her. Then and only then did it dawn on her exactly who I was. And she tried to get me. She's like, well, I don't want to see this tent popping up somewhere else. And I said, look, lady, you know, it's a long rainy season, man. I said, you know, this is the game, you know. I'm going to try to sleep and stay dry and not get caught, and you're going to try to catch me. I was like, you know, I'm not going to promise you something I can't possibly uphold. I was like, you know, that's...
All you have to do is get on a waiting list, and you can have your ticket dismissed.
We all know the game. Well,
but you can't get this kind of ticket dismissed because it's not a camping ticket. Very
interesting. It's not. It's a closed area ticket, and like I said, I'm pretty sure that particular area is not under that city closed area jurisdiction thing, so...
We'll see about that.
We'll see how that goes, but...
Anything else? I know, I understand Lito has been twice arrested.
Probably, but he's also been pretty intoxicated lately, so I'm not sure if it's political or if it's just Lito being
foolish.
Yeah. Foolish.
Ill-advised.
Yeah.
We're talking about Miguel de León, who's the subject of an injunction, permanent injunction, along with Anna Richardson.
Anna Richardson's back in town. She's looking really, really good. Looks like she's doing a lot better than she was a year ago. I think probably staying away from Santa Cruz has done her immeasurable good, or it seems to.
How's Don Valley doing?
John Valley is just as crazy as ever.
The man with a wheelchair who was probably the most, shall we say, extravagant in his possessions of anybody at Peace Camp 2010.
Yes, he's extravagant in his possessions. He's a junk collector, basically. And I've come to learn, not to be angry about it, that it's actually a malady. It's a mental illness, and I didn't realize that. So
some people in houses have it. I won't be given any name.
Yeah, no, they do. And they do. And you go in, and their place is filled to the ceiling. And I've known several, I've had several friends that have had that condition, and where they just can't stop buying little things, and they just pile up around their ears literally. So, you know, it is what it is. There have been massive sweeps on the avenue. Two nights ago, Sergeant Harms decided that he was going to literally introduce himself to every street person on the street.
Two nights ago was Halloween evening.
It would have been three nights ago. It was the evening before Halloween, and Sergeant Harms and Officer Forbes, who seem to be connected at the hip lately, I don't know if they're getting married or what the deal is, but they definitely seem to be buddies, and you can see old Forbes's tongue just kind of dragging behind and going right up Harms's butthole. I mean, they're like tethered together. But in any case, they decided to go up and down the avenue. They spent a good 2 hours out here and literally introducing themselves to every single street person. So they walked into the midst of every gathering. There were lots and lots of arrests. I saw at least a half a dozen arrests.
For what kinds of things?
Anything they found when they happened to walk up on you. I mean, you know, if you were smoking pot, there was a couple for pot. There was a couple for warrants. You know, anything that they could find, which is what the whole thing was, is a fishing expedition. I mean, they weren't doing community service trying to, which is how he would play it off. If anybody ever interviewed him, he'd be like, well, I've got a right to know the citizens and introduce myself to the citizens in the community. That's how he would play it off. But what it was basically a very highly intrusive sweep of the avenue using the guise of, you know, I am Sergeant Harms and just wanted to welcome you to town, you know, kind of thing.
I'll go to jail.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There, at least a half a dozen people were hauled off, and it was very uncomfortable for a couple hours out there on the avenue while that was going on. And it was very tricksy. You know, they were very tricksy about it, like where they would, you know, if they would walk by you if they saw you doing something, sort of ignore it, and then they'd come around behind you. You know what I mean? Come sneak up behind you and grab you, like rolling a joint or something like that.
Did you follow them down, or did you just see it happen at one
point? I followed them for about 2 blocks from somewhere around Starbucks to somewhere around Logos bookstore, and that was after I was told by Dreamcatcher that was what they were doing, and I just wanted to sort of verify that he was, you know, that he had it right, you know, because it sounded rather odd to me. He's like, yeah, Sergeant Harms is going around introducing himself to everybody, and I was like, what? You know, so I followed him, and sure enough, that's exactly what he was doing, you know, and...
However, his objective may have been something quite different.
Oh, I'm certain his objective was to clear the streets before Halloween and get as many as possible street people off the streets prior to the Halloween celebration. Like, somehow we're responsible for all that mayhem that goes on down here on Halloween night, you know, which turned out not to be mayhem. You know, I was up here for Halloween night. There was barely 7,000 people would be my estimate. Right, I use that estimate because that's what they estimated for New Year's, and I think that's the crowd looked just about as dense as it was on New Year's. Everybody was extraordinarily peaceful. I saw one really knockdown, drag-out fist fight, two white guys, two bums, two winos, proceeded to knock each other silly over a bottle of wine, and were almost immediately hauled away by a slew of different jurisdictional police officers. I think they were jumped by park rangers, that security guard.
Shannon Stranger.
Yeah, first alarm guy, the park rangers.
Call them false alarm guys.
And two Watsonville police brought these guys in. They were pretty big, and they were covered in blood. They led them through the coffee roaster and out through here, out this way. And that was the only problem I saw, and it was quickly dealt with. And it looked like everybody had a good time. The one thing that was very underreported in the media was the over 100 UFOs that were released over Santa Cruz, over Pacific Avenue that night, which were really dramatic. I have to say, I've been in Santa Cruz a while now, a long time, and I've seen some really creative, some really surreal spiritual moments before, but this was it. It was right around 1 o'clock, and I had already retired from the scene, and I was down on the river bottom in my usual spot. I got a really good view of Ocean Street, River Street, the bridges, all that sort of thing from down there, and I was just kind of watching the whole thing, the helicopter going up and down and that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden, and what's really funny about this is a week before, I had encountered one of these UFOs. They were apparently being tested, and only one was released in the park that night. And it got me. It fooled me. And I was so convinced that I wouldn't tell anybody because I thought I was going crazy. It was very, very realistic looking. It was unbelievable, these things. What they actually were giant. I finally figured out they were pumpkins. They're approximately the size of a beach ball. And somehow internal fire was used to cause these things to rise and to float.
The case of the floating pumpkin.
And they were people were prepared. They were actually the launching point, which the police never found, but searched for hard for like an hour, but never found, was the footbridge of the San Lorenzo Park. That was the launching point. And they would...
saw them being launched?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And I even could overhear the people frantically searching for more lighter. Ah, my lighter's going dry. Yeah, give me that lighter over there. I could actually hear their voices as they put these things together. And they would float really low for a while, about 50 feet, and they would come over the CVS and Trader Joe's parking lot. And these guys lucked out so good because right about the time it would hit here, Pacific Avenue, it caught an updraft, a nice gentle one, that would cause them to spiral straight up over Pacific Avenue. So, I mean, it was just the luck
about
of the time.
What time was this?
1 o'clock, about 1 a.m. The only place where it was even vaguely mentioned was a single YouTube video of the Halloween night, but you couldn't really see them in the shot because the light pollution from on the avenue, the real view of it was what the one I had, because you had the black backdrop, you know what I mean, and you could see him. And it chased the helicopter clean out of the sky. He fled.
There was a police helicopter.
There was a police helicopter.
Keeping an eye on the celebrant.
And he fled, and I have a feeling he initially was tricked by it like everybody else. And there was, you know, for, like I said, I had encountered one of these things apparently being tested in the park several nights before, and had really, honest to God, was convinced that I had seen something, and had kept it to myself because I thought everybody would think I was crazy. And when the first four went up, I was like, oh no, not again. And I really, honest to God, thought I was going crazy. These things were really had a way of tricking you because they were big and they were oval and they floated very slow. They appeared to maneuver. You know, even though it was just the luck of the draw.
We'll leave the pumpkin UFO subject at this time.
Yeah.
Anything else you wish to talk about?
No, that's it. Other than, like I said, it chased the helicopter away and for the night. They were gone. They left for the night. I guess they must have figured that's enough, man. They're watching things.
We call that helicopter control.
And the police were off. You could see the police furiously driving. Boom, boom, you know, all over around this area because they knew it was being launched from somewhere here, but they couldn't. Never did find a launching point, and these guys got them all off. So God bless
them. Those pumpkin
God bless them. Whoever you are out there, if you're listening, you really made the night. I thought it was a real magical moment, and it was right on time, man. So it was a real neat addition, and it was the first thing that quieted the crowd down. The crowd actually got really quiet for a while. There's like this ooh and ah thing going on, you know, so it was beautiful. It was just beautiful.
We've been talking with
Kurt Bugger Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Sometimes you have to take the initiative.
Sometimes your whole family dies of cholera.
Sometimes you have to make your own story.
Sometimes you have to soothe the storyteller in the neck.
Sometimes you have to take back the country.
Sometimes you have to kill everyone, 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 everyone.
I always thought I'd never be that guy, but guess what I'm pretending to. I always thought I'd never be that guy, but guess what I'm telling you.
I will make them all bleed!
Not much left to-
He went and hanged himself, and then there were none.
And that was more from Bloody, Bloody Andrew Jackson. Got another 7 minutes of the show, and coming up next is going to be Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs. Anything coming up, Uncle Dennis, on the news report coming up around, what, 9, 9:30?
9 o'clock for the Earth First Update.
Earth First Update at 9 o'clock. I guess you got to hang out till 9 to find out what's going
on. You know, it's one of those things.
You got to be there. Now, is there any place that this is replicated or archived for those who missed the 9 o'clock update, Uncle Dennis?
H2Opodcast.com.
H2Opodcast.com. For those of you who just cannot stay up until 9 o'clock, you know, your parents may have strict rules. After all, we are trying to, should we say, reinstitute the 19th century here in Santa Cruz with a more conservative trend. I believe some of your candidates...
My candidate didn't win.
That's correct. Or that's not... It's correct, but it's not right. Let's put it that way. Interesting online discovery here. 3 years of the Safer Cities Initiative. I went to the RAP, Western Regional Advocacy Project website, and this is an analysis of Los Angeles's, essentially, they call them the Quality of Life Initiative, the Quality of Life laws, such as Santa Cruz's Don't Sit Near a Building, Don't Sit on a Fence, Don't Sit Within 50 Feet of an ATM Machine, no holding up a sign silently after dark seeking spare change. The anti-homeless laws, in other words, that are designed to, you know, eliminate the riffraff because, you know, the presence of a homeless person is like a broken window to the Santa Cruz Police Department, according to its own manual, and that will cause more crime in an area to occur, you see. That's the rationale for the downtown ordinances, as articulated in the early 80s in an Atlantic Monthly article, actually. But in Los Angeles, apparently it doesn't work too well, even though it's, of course, being used to clear the area, certain parts of town for gentrification. This is an article called 3 Years of the Safer Cities Initiative from September 2009. The allocation of officers is not supported by crime statistics. It's not abnormal for the DA to have a policy, but this policy is about targeting the homeless in that area because the city is redeveloping that area. It's a policy to get people off the streets and into state prison, jumping right over rehab and jail, according to the public defender in the Daily Journal of January 29, 2007. Outgoing LAPD Chief William Bratton has touted his use of comp stats and other crime data as a way to ensure that officers in Los Angeles are deployed to areas most in need. However, an examination of crime data versus officer deployment rates in Skid Row illustrates a markedly different reality. The data does not support the 3-year allocation of 50 additional uniformed officers and dozens of undercover officers in the Skid Row area. This is important for Santa Cruz, of course, because we're going to be spending $1 million this year on 8 new cops to harass people in the downtown area and to remind them that they've been sitting on a bench for 61 minutes, things of this sort, which is illegal in Santa Cruz. For example, the number of violent crimes per officer in Newton in the 77th divisions are 240% higher than in the Central District. Newton and 77th divisions in South Central Los Angeles are low-income neighborhoods home to predominantly Latino and African-American residents. Central Division has been rapidly gentrifying over the past 5 to 10 years, and outside of the Skid Row community is largely home to wealthy white people. The number of officers assigned to these divisions is clearly not based on the levels of violent crime, as promised by Bratton, but instead on the needs and demands of wealthier residents and developers. I think this is really kind of an obvious phenomenon, so I'm not going to belabor it, but I think this kind of documentation is important, and in fact, in all candor, I haven't read this story through thoroughly. It supports my ideological position, so I'm reading it. But that doesn't mean it's not true. So I will advise those who are interested to check out this particular story. You can find it by going to RAP Home. That's RAP like in gift wrap, WRAPHome.org, and checking out the particular article, which is The Quality of Whose Life. And it's an analysis of the claims behind the over-policing of areas that is happening not just in Los Angeles, but in cities throughout the country, or at least in my own city. So that's it for this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. That's Uncle Dennis, always a cheery voice in the studio, coming after the election. Quite appropriate, I think, that kind of cheering. We can hear it all over the country. But unfortunately not from the people that I support particularly, although it's good to see the Democrats kicked in the ass. Generally speaking, unfortunately, we're also getting kicked in the ass as well. So it's a bad situation. I'll be back on Sunday. 9:30 is my usual show time. Sometimes I show up earlier. And also, there are massive amounts of free radio time coming up on free radio. And we need, actually, people who are interested in doing programs. Otherwise, I will fill the air with Bathroom Spears Broadsides. No doubt a development Uncle Dennis welcomes. But nonetheless, one which... it'd be nice to have some variety. We can use some new voices on free radio. Give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz if you're interested, or actually go online and download an application at freakradio.org. I'll see you again, or actually I won't see you at all, but might hear you again. You can hear me again on Sunday at 9:30. In between times, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and we'll talk, 423-4833, about whatever you'd like to talk about. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Time, sweet time.